Well, dear listener, it will probably come as news to me. It was news to you. It was certainly news to me. In January of this year, the biggest private land deal in post-colonial Africa took place. A US businessman, backed by former CIA and State Department officials, purchased a vast tract of fertile land in southern Sudan from the family of a notorious warlord. Now, the purchase of arable land in developing countries by outsiders, individuals and governments, is a growing trend in the international food crisis. Is this simply colonialism by another name, or perhaps might such investments help ease global poverty? Joining me to discuss this development and its implications are Joachim von Braun, Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C., an organisation devoted to seeking sustainable solutions for ending hunger and poverty, and supported by the Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research, which is an alliance of 64 governments, private foundations, and international and regional organisations. We also have Javier Blas joining us from London. He's a commodities correspondent with the Financial Times and has been writing extensively on the buy-up of farmland in the developing world by foreign parties. And I welcome both of you to LNL. Javier, let's start with this massive land deal, this particular one in South Sudan, because it's made the trend front page news. You broke the story for the Financial Times. How much land was bought, for how much, and by whom?
A lot of land, 400,000 hectares of land in southern Sudan. That's quite an impressive amount of land. And we don't know the price because the parties have not disclosed any details whatsoever of this transaction. But we know that it was a U.S. investor that has been active in southern sub-Saharan Africa and has very well connected, particularly with a former State Department and intelligence official of the United States. And he's betting that his new farm in southern Sudan will be profitable and he will be able either to farm it or maybe sell to another party.
Tell us who this mysterious Mr. Heilberg bought the land from. It's the son of a warlord, is it not?
Yeah, it is the son of one of notorious warlords in southern Sudan. It's a warlord that has fought against Khartoum, depending on where the political wind was blowing at that time. And this particular person has been accused of war crimes by several organizations, and some governments, including the United States, have doubts about the deal and what the warlord was doing. But Mr. Heilberg assured us that he has all the paperwork correct, that everything is legal, and that he's willing to do the farming deal. So the transaction went on.
He claims that his motivation is to transform the area into a world-class breadbasket. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's exactly what he wants to do. He said that he will be farming wheat and other cereals, and he said that there's a domestic market for it, and there's also an export market for it. And the deal is special because it's a big deal because of the parties involved on it, but it's just the tip of the iceberg of other deals that are going on in Sudan, in Ethiopia, in poor countries, that these deals could help some of these countries. I mean, at least they are getting some foreign investment. But and some people think that it will be good for the countries to get this kind of investment. Others are reluctant, and they think that it's going to use increased poverty. It's going to remove land for already smallholders, small farmers in the area, that they don't have any property right for the land, but they have been farming the land for generations, and it could increase neocolonialism in Africa. There are two views.
What's your view thus far?
Well, thus far, I'm concerned because most of the deals are very secretive. And one thing that concerns me is that some of the African governments that are signing the deals, they don't have the capacity to understand the implications, what they are signing. I think that these deals could help some countries. It could attract foreign investment that is needed in Africa, particularly in agriculture. But I think that it's very urgent that international organizations, probably starting with the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and the World Bank, try to write a code of conduct and advise the countries how is the best way to sign the deals, how to get the small farmers involved on the deals, and create what now looks so nasty examples of new colonialism into real win-win situations.
Of course, Harburg can point to some pretty auspicious board members. He's got Joseph Wilson, who's a former ambassador, an expert on Africa, Gwyneth Todd, who's an advisor on Middle Eastern and North African affairs to Clinton. They will also, I guess, be taking the high moral ground as well as the real estate.
Yeah, I mean, they said that there is nothing wrong with the deal and they are going to bring investment into Africa. That's a very good thing. There are doubts about, well, if their party, which they have signed the deal, has the capability to sign the deal, if he owns that amount of land or he's taking from some smallholder farmers in the area. But look, one thing that we have complained, everyone involved in development in Africa, is that no one was investing in agriculture in Africa. For the first time probably in 30 years, we have meaningful investment. We are talking about millions of dollars of investment in agriculture in Africa. The problem is the way those investments are coming. If we can transform this investment into a good thing, that will be good for the African governments, good for the African people. But
okay,
the question is, how do you do?
Well, let's get a second opinion now. Let's invite Joachim into the conversation. The deal done by Philippe Heilberg is clearly an extreme example, but it's representative of a trend you've observed. There's a growing number of private land deals for farmland happening across the developing world.
Actually, it's more an exception. There were always private land deals made in countries which have land and lots of water, and others who have capital and little land, say the Arab Gulf countries and so on. There are also the traditional private sector investments from North America and South America in the corporate sector. What's really new is not these investments. There were always hazardous investors also in Africa. What's really new is government-to-government deals. Countries like Kuwait or Libya, United Arab Emirates, and others who are lots of capital but very little farmland and no water, or very little water, look to secure their supply line. And they are trying to do that by investing in countries like Sudan or like Liberia or in Pakistan, those three examples, to secure a supply of their food when the international markets are malfunctioning. And that has happened last year when we had explosive tendencies in the world food price situation.
Sure, yeah.
And when these countries were not able to buy the food they wanted, although they were rich. And secondly, they are scared about the climate change tendencies and that food in general might become more expensive. So these are government-to-government investments. I very much agree that we need transparency in these deals. That's currently not given. I have been arguing since a year to establish a sound code of conduct, which must include a prior information and prior consent of the people in the area where investment takes place, and respect for property rights and good agricultural practices, so that we are not undermining the productive potentials of the smallholder sector.
Joachim, I should make it clear that, of course, Australia has a long history of selling the farm, and that there were times when vast areas of this country, equivalent in size to European nations, were bought up by British and Americans. And at the moment, I'm watching with a degree of alarm the purchase of water rights up and down our river systems by sizable and often multinational corporations. And wasn't there an even bigger deal than Halberg's involving 1.3 million hectares of farmland in Madagascar?
Yeah. That deal, which apparently has fallen through for various reasons, was in terms of size and transparency alarming. And I know that area of Madagascar, I've been there. It is underutilized, and it would have benefited from good investment in land use and rice farming and so on. The scale of it, I think, was shocking. But apparently that one also has fallen through. On the other hand, that deal had some appeal because South Korea has a strong understanding of how to do small farm agriculture. South Korea itself is largely small farm structured. So I would have expected if would have gotten a good deal for Madagascar with South Korean foreign direct investment, it could actually have led not to plantation agriculture, but to small farm agriculture. But that's water under the bridge. The deal has fallen through.
Well, talking about water...
Which is currently happening with many.
Okay, talking about water under the bridge takes us to the fertile Nile Valley, where I understand the Saudis have acquired 25,000 hectares. It's not a huge bit of land, north of Khartoum. So it's happening all over the place.
That's right. Although I think currently there is still more talk than action. The motivation of governments who want to secure their supply is clear. So they have started talking and in the beginning have been very open with great fanfare that they were signing great letters of intent with millions of dollars involved and tens of thousands of hectares. So, for instance, especially in Sudan, which has a tradition to attract investors who come, talk, and leave. So I think when these things have been shaken out and when we keep watching it carefully, some good may actually come out of it.
Well, let's hope that's right. Let's go back to Javier Blas. Have you been able to prognosticate on the likely impact in poverty-stricken regions? For example, okay, on the one hand, he's a boost to the economy. On the other, it looks like a lot of the food we're discussing will be shipped overseas.
Yeah, but that's food that is not in production already in these countries. It's not that they are going to take current production out of the country. So I think that at the beginning we have a rush for signing deals, and the talk was massive investment, massive amount of land taken, and this was brought to media attention, to public attention, and my impression from talking with some policymakers that they are taking a step back, looking at what is the best way to do the deals. And I agree with Joaquin that something good could come out of these deals. If you talk about investing in Sudan and you are not taking current food production, you are increasing the production. And even if you export most of that production, some of that food is going to remain in the country. The investment is going to remain in the country. The jobs that are going to be created could be for local people. But the question here is not on the deal, it's on the detail of the deal. And that's why I think it's, as Joaquin was saying, it's very urgent that we set a set of rules on how to do these deals, because the deals at the end are going to happen. The countries in the Middle East are concerned about water scarcity, are concerned about food security, and they know that even with all the money they have from the oil export revenues, last year they were unable to buy food, some food, in particular rice, because the exporting countries were not selling. So the deals are going to happen, but the international community should try to influence the detail of the deals.
Well, let's go back to Joachim. What are the rules you're proposing? Would you just give us a simple version of them?
Yeah. Local farmers must be informed before the deal is signed and give their consent if it's the land they cultivate, even if that land is owned by the state, as it is typically the case in much of Africa. So secure property rights for the current users. Second is sustainable management of land and water, so no soil mining and water mining, and leaving behind awful destroyed environment. And third, adhering to the trade rules of the country so that from these farms and enterprises, the food cannot simply be exported in times of local food shortages. But let me add one point. I think it's very important that we also look at the domestic land grabbing. If you look at Sudan, yes, there are outsiders who are now looking for land, but for decades, domestically, land has been grabbed by military and political and business leaders at the cost of local farmers, and that was at a much larger scale than some of these emerging international deals. So we need general better land policies.
Okay, I must say that some of the things that Hallberg said to you, Javier, were concerning, that he's looking around for at political instability, seeing where opportunities for this sort of investment present themselves. But perhaps we are jumping at shadows. So at the end of the day, you're still half convinced it'll work out okay?
I am convinced that some of the deals, I'm not sure about this particular one, and obviously on every trend you have some black spots, but I am convinced that at the end, if the international community reacts, and I think that some institutions, and particularly IFPRI, are working on trying to set the rules for this to work, and if the international community reacts and we try to influence the detail of the deals, it could be a good thing. What we have been missing in agriculture in Africa for many, 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 many years was investment. That investment is beginning to flow, and if we are able to influence the deals, we will have something good. For that, we need to keep the story alive, and it's good that, you know, we are paying attention to that. And also, the other thing that the international community should try to do is bring transparency. Trying to find details of many of these deals is extremely difficult, not to say impossible. Transparency and a set of new rules is what they will transform what is looking now bad as a good thing for the countries.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on this, and we'd like to talk to the two of you again down the track. Thank you for your time. I've been talking to Joachim von Braun, Director General of the Washington-based International Food Policy Research Institute, and to Javier Blas, a commodities correspondent with the Financial Times. And this is Late Night Live on ABC Radio National.